Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome, everybody, to All Net, the Irish Examiner basketball podcast. It is 2023, episode 5. Kieran, you're very welcome. Did you have a good Christmas and Happy New Year, first of all?
Yeah, thanks, Connor. No, great. I had a winter break there. We were away in the Canaries for a week, but back into it now. And first weekend, full weekend of the year, we're straight in down to Cork for the Cup semi-final. It's you're part of it. You're playing at half 12 in Glenmire. What did you take over during the Christmas? Did you have a few training sessions or what?
We had like one or two, but it's slightly different with the NICC than it is at Super League level. But at the same time, it still has the best thing always when you're involved in the Cup is that once you get through Stephen's Day, you're kind of like, right, you have something really exciting to look forward to and you're getting back into it. You're excited to get down and train and different things. And it all feels a little bit different because usually for like Super League teams and things, they might even get some trainings during the day rather than kind of having to train at whatever, 7-8 o'clock at night at the end of each day and everything else. So people just... for a lot of people, once Christmas ends, you're kind of like, oh, we're facing into a bleak kind of January. But for basketball people, it's and particularly people involved in the Cup, it's amazing to have this thing straight away to start the new year.
Yeah, look, it was one of the things that basketball identified, and I suppose was the appeal of the Cup, where they identified January was a dead enough time in the Irish sporting calendar in general, and. You know, that's been the tradition. I think your own father was president at the time when that decision was made in 83-84. And we now have it that, like, you're heading down to Cork. We were just saying, just before we came along, that for Connor, for yourself, you were part of that first Cup semi-final weekend that when it went back down to Cork. So we were just saying in the last podcast, it's 30 years since the arena opened, which meant the Cup went from Neptune to the arena. And that was the case. Historically, we had it for the first up until 2006-07, where the Cup semi-finals and finals were all played in the one weekend. Then it was staggered, which we have now. First of all, what did you, as a player, is it much better to have the semi-final and finals on separate weekends, to have that two-week break, as opposed to 16-hour turnaround, which it would have been for the first 20 years or so of the Cup?
I haven't played both ways, so it's hard to say. But I think from a pure basketball way, yeah, it builds the anticipation, the expectation. Like the couple of years that we got to the Cup final, the 2 weeks in between the semi-final and the final, the whole club's getting like buzzing about it. You're talking about tickets in a way that you don't normally do, and it's hard to drive that in the same way for if it's all over one weekend. But I remember as a kid going up to the arena because dad was so involved, and I basically lived off hot dogs and just sat in the seats by myself watching the games the whole weekend in the kind of mid-90s and loved it. So it used to have a special thing, that whole, and a little bit more probably Cup craziness probably came into it in those one weekends because you never knew what happened, that one team would have an extra day's rest as well because some people played on Friday night rather than Saturday, and injuries and all these sort of things could happen. So it takes a little bit of that out of it, but I think it builds the anticipation and it is probably better overall.
I think they've hit on a great blend now because, as you said, that was the way it was, the semi-final and final. I suppose it helped television at the time, RT, that it was just the one weekend. So you had the Friday night, the Saturday night games, and then the Sunday showing, obviously the final showing live. But then they found, as it went into the noughties, they wanted to have more packaged, let's say, for, let's say, the final, and that they didn't have enough turnaround time to do that. And I just think as a weekend, it lacked something for those few years. But then what happened was in 2010, it was the 25th anniversary of the arena being opened, or sorry, the Neptune Stadium being opened and the first cup being held down there, obviously. And that coincided with, you know, the famous Strickland on the buzzer game. And that the fact that the two of them, Neptune and Demons, were drawn in the semi-final, it was a bit of a nostalgia kick. Rafters had just come out that Christmas, and there was just this sense that, well, it doesn't make sense for it to be anywhere else. And so the semi-finals were moved down to Cork that weekend, and it was a classic game. Demons won in the last minute, and it was a sensational game. You were playing in the game before, Connor, against Kilester, who would win out that cup. And you'll remember that, the atmosphere in the hall, in the stadium.
Yeah. It was crazy, because one of the things, there's a great picture actually in Neptune Stadium when you come out of the changing rooms and you're going out that kind of fire exit that's in between the bar and the changing rooms. There's a picture from that game, I'm pretty sure it is. And it was, they put in additional seating behind the benches. They had tiered seating behind the benches as well. So there's a couple of rows there. There's rows in the back. And I think it was before, I can't remember if it was before they kind of redid the office area up in the...
That was done good bit before.
Oh, well, yeah. But it was just jammed. And one of the things, I think we were talking about it a few weeks ago with to do with the streaming, where we were seeing stuff that we had never seen before. And that was my first ever introduction into a Neptune Demons derby. I'd never seen it before. I'd only ever heard things about it. And we were in a pretty bad mood after just getting whooped by Kilester, but it was still kind of just looking around the place going, this is so alien to everything that we kind of experience on a week-to-week basis. Mm-hmm. It had a magic about it that I think captured everyone's imagination. And just about the weekend in general, it's, well, two things about it. One, I had played in, we played in a semi-final against Tralee in, I'd say 2007, 8, I don't know, which was televised, because RTÉ used to still televise even when it was split over two weekends. And I remember one or two of those, like that game against Tralee was good, but it was half empty National Basketball Arena. I remember Hoops played a cup semi-final one of the years, and there was maybe 200 people in the arena on national TV, and it was kind of... It was so far away from what it's kind of become over the last couple of years. And yeah. I think the big part of it, and again, it wraps into what we were talking about just before Christmas, is that Castle Island have this community feel within their own community. Whereas the National Cup semi-final weekend is probably the standout weekend in terms of the basketball calendar, of the whole basketball community being in one city at the same time. There being everything from under 18s to intermediate to Super League, everything's happening at the same time, and there's nothing like it in our calendar, and it's definitely been an amazing success.
No, I think it's really worked well. It keeps, like, we get that balance of the 2 week gap, and yet it's a festival, as you said, like, because in Cork, and I think it was huge for the cup, and I think it was great for Cork, because there would have been that sense of alienation of, you know, there was the 2-1 Americans in 88, 89, and then the cup going up there. But I think now the fact that it has this weekend, there's Cork is the weekend, because you said in those few years, those interregnum years, people were hedging their bets. Which weekend do I go up to, you know, go up to the arena twice? Do I wait for the final? Whereas now, yeah, we're going down to Cork. And then there's a novelty to going up to the arena 2 weeks later. So it's the best of both worlds. We mentioned that it was Neptune and Demons. That I think they met in three of the first 4 years of that weekend. Neither of them made it through, but Emporium Ballincollig Cork have made it through. So there's a Cork interest in this, which will help Neptune be pretty packed on Saturday. We're delighted that Adrian O'Sullivan is joining us on the podcast. And obviously, Connor, like that game is going to be a standout game, the Emporium Cork.
Yeah, it's probably the Super League game, or the men's game anyway, of the two games. It's the one that I think everyone's excited from a neutral perspective to see. It's two teams who are excellent. They have a kind of history against each other, even from National League over the couple of years when they were both trying to get back up to the Super League at the same time. Sure. They then have carried that into now, and it's exciting for, like, Aina are a standalone new club. They're not Denny Notre Dame of the past. So it's effectively two teams who've never won the cup before, who are both really excellent teams, who have an opportunity to book a place and have that opportunity to win their first ever cup. So it's one that I certainly think are probably the form team in the country. They haven't lost since October. And yet Ballincollig are going to be, I think there's going to be an excitement around them coming into it that could lift them, particularly in Cork. So look, we'll bring on Adrian O'Sullivan, who obviously is playing with Emporium Cork Basketball. He has a history of being in the competition. He's kind of been there, done that with Demons in the past. But Adrian, you're very welcome. It's an exciting week to be. Anytime I used to talk to Kieran O'Sullivan, your brother, obviously, he used to look at our Marion teams and kind of be like, it would be so different if we got the opportunity to play with our family club and try and win something big. So just how is it in this kind of big week leading up to the Cup semi-final weekend?
Hi, lads. How's it going? It's great to be here. So thanks a million for having me. Yeah, look, I suppose you know the way, you know what it's like to play at your family club and, you know, attempting to be successful and all that. So, yeah, look, it's really, really exciting. You know, I've played in Cup semi-finals before with Blue Demons. But, yeah, look, I'm back home now and there's a real family feel to it. So, you know, there's nothing more you want to do than win with the people that you grew up with. You know, so training's going well and we're just very excited now. And, it's, you know, it's our first time, obviously, as a club. So, yeah, it's all going well. It's just very exciting.
And, Adrian, like Connor mentioned that while the club itself hasn't a cup pedigree at Super League level, individually you do, and Connor referenced there just your own involvement with Demons. And we're on about great cup moments. Like, a standout for me is a Friday night, yourselves and Kilester, when they were at the Zenit. Like, it was Demons Kilester going at each other for 6 or 7 years. And I remember you winning that game on the free throw line. What is your own memories of playing? Because you would have grown up, your family are steeped in the sport, you know, like Francis is one of the great contributors and obviously your mother Grace as well. But for someone who grew up being appreciative of cup history and maybe seeing old games back, etc., but then to be part of it and to be in that moment, like, talk to us about now and what it was like in the moment and now being able to have that perspective off, let's say, a game like Kilester and yourselves where it was jammed on the wire, yeah. Down to the wire.
Yeah, look, I suppose a bit like Connor, I kind of grew up around the game, grew up sitting in the stands watching all the greats play. And I remember my first real National Cup final experience was when, I think it was 2003, 2004 final, when Shane Collin hit the two free throws against Neptune. So I was actually standing behind the basket in between my mom and dad where Shane hit the two free throws. And 10 years later, then in 2013, I won my first cup in my first year of Super League. Playing with Shane, so that's always been one that definitely stands out to me. I was very lucky to come onto the team that I came onto. You know, Colin O'Reilly came back from his couple of years away. You know, Kyle was there, Kieran was there, Niall Murphy, Carlton Cuff. You know, we had Lamont Colbert, who is, in my mind, one of the best Americans that's come into the league in the last 15, 20 years. So look, I was just extremely lucky to be coming into the team, and I was just like a sponge those first couple of years. I was the, you know, come off the bench, run up and down the sideline, play defense, shoot the open shot. There was no pressure. So I was very, very lucky to be on that team. But yeah, that Friday night against Kilester, it's definitely another one. What I was doing on the court at the end of the game, I think Shane might have been fouled out maybe. So yeah, it was, Kilester had the ball with about, I'd say it was about 6 seconds to go. And I remember Kieran O'Brien, the ball got fumbled to him, and he shot a shot or whatever, and it rimmed off. I got the rebound, and it was a 50-50 ball, and I actually got fouled on a 50-50 rebound. missed the first free throw. We're down one, missed the first free throw, scored the second one, and then it goes into overtime, and we win the game in overtime. But yeah, I think Kyle.
Gee, what was it, just on that, right? What was like? You had to make the second one. What was going through your mind at that moment? How do you approach it having missed the first?
I can't remember. I can't remember what was going through because. There was obviously there's a lot of people there that knew exactly what was going on, but you know there's probably 1,800 people in that stadium at the time. So there's a couple of people that don't, you know, that might not know exactly what's going on. So they're on team fouled. So obviously I have to go to the line, even though it was a 50-50 rebound. So I got fouled, and then like it's underneath our basket, so I have whatever 70 feet to walk. Where it's like an agent and John McHale's on the mic, like an agent or is going to the line for two free throws, and I'm like. 19, 20 years of age, like, crap, like, this is, like, this is Conor O'Reilly's legacy here. This is Shane calling Conor O'Reilly's legacy. If I don't make this, like, I'll never hear the end of it. So the first one rimmed out, and then I don't know, I took whatever, I did my routine again, and it just, I don't know, it fell, it went in. But I think it was easier to be in my position than it was to be in my own mom and dad's position at that moment. But, yeah, definitely a great memory, definitely a great memory.
It's just I was in the Demons crowd in 03 as well, by the way.
Oh yeah.
wearing a blue t-shirt that they had all the t-shirts given out, myself and Dave Murphy standing in the middle of the Demons crowd because Dave was the one I used to house with every time for Irish national teams.
Excellent.
But Adrian brought up some bad memories, Kieran, for me during the week, which I'm pretty unhappy about.
I knew that, this was gonna come off.
So Adrian had a takeover of the Sideline Live Instagram account during the week, and he was asked one of his favorite cup memories. And I was going through my day, having a great time, enjoying work, everything else, to see what Adrian's up to on cup week, and then suddenly click onto one of the worst memories of my life. And
Adrian, when they gave you a fairly good hammering, was it?
It was the week previous.
Yeah, one of the most bizarre situations. Go on, Adrian, you explain.
So this was when we played Colestra on that Friday, that was the semi-final. And the quarter-final that year and the year after, I think it was only 2 years they did, Conor. We was at the quarter-final stage, Kieran, it was the first leg, so you'd have a home leg and an away leg. It was two leg, like Champions League or whatever.
Oh,
so
yes.
So
it's the buzzer beater by Shane Collin, was it?
This is it, yeah. So we, for the people that don't know, we beat Marion by 31, I think it was, on a Sunday in the Mardyke with like about 30 people there. Played really well, whatever. And then I suppose we kind of take it for granted. But Yanis, being the genius that he is, makes a couple of different rotations and starts a different couple of players. And they came out with four guards and they're American and they just up and down. And next thing we know, we're kind of 17-4 down and we're chasing our tail, but we're playing like not to lose by 30 or not to lose by 31, let's say. And the next thing we know, like it's halftime, we're down 15, down 16, and then they make another run in the third quarter. And I just remember, what I remember from that game outside of Shane's shot was just inbounding the ball in either own basket. They couldn't miss. There's whatever it is. I think Owen Chubb is at the line. And there's about 6 seconds to go. Second free throw rims in. He scores this. So we're down 32, I think it was.
So you're down one on aggregate, is it?
Down two on aggregate. It might even be Conor, I think.
I think so.
So we actually, we were. I think we needed a three. If it was a two, it would have went into overtime. Mm. So Shane, like, he's bouncing up and down the court as he's done whatever, year in, year out, and just pulls this Conor, and I'm not just saying it because he's here, ridiculous defense, and Barry Drum sprints across to challenge him, but Shane is just, I don't know, jumping out the sideline off an incredible step back, as Shane Collin only could do, and he knocks it in. The next thing, we're celebrating, but it's funny, the camera goes to the scoreboard, and it's like 98-68, and we're on 68, but we're the ones that are shouting and roaring and screaming, and that was definitely the most ridiculous thing I've ever been a part of. So I think the following year they had it again, but we didn't make the same mistake. We actually played Kilester in that quarterfinal. We didn't make the same mistake where we didn't show up the second day. But since then, it's been the once off.
Yeah, it's interesting because even like the Kilester game that Kieran's talking about, that you actually got the scares in the earlier rounds of the two cup wins, because the two cup finals were fairly like, we played you in one year that we were very lucky to be there. We didn't have a good enough team, and you played, I think Inter was the other one. The first year,
Inter, they was there probably first and only time. I think that was their last year, maybe. Yeah. Maybe they played the following year. But yeah, they were lopsided, but it was very, like, I felt like my first year in the league, it was almost like our name was written on the cup with the way we won on the Friday night against Leicester, being, I think it was 17 down, 15 down going into the fourth. And then obviously that Shane Collins shot in the previous round as well. So it just might have been written for Shane and Niall and Colin at that year.
Adrian, you talked about, obviously you had good pedigree coming through with Ballincollig. Then you're on that, you come on to that Demons team, which was an exceptional group. But you're someone that was referenced. We were talking quite a bit earlier about how many guys develop, you know, in their mid-20s. And you were, Connor cited you as someone who has, like, you decided to go abroad then for a couple of years to play. Just because a lot of guys, you know, would just maybe just, I am what I am, I'll stay at home. Just talk to us about what influenced that decision to go and play abroad.
Colin, Kyle, Shane, Niall, all of their, you know, their experience and what, you know, kind of just edging me, not edging me out the door, but like selfishly, I suppose they wanted me to play with Demons, but they kind of knew where I was at. I had just finished my masters, and then Ballincollig were on the up, but they were playing National League. And you know, not to be arrogant or anything, but I was, you know, just coming into my prime, and there was a choice: is it, do I go down National League and play with Ciarán, or, you know, can I trust them to build their way up and do the heavy lifting before they get to Super League? And I was always kind of curious. I was always kind of like, how far could I, like, where could I push the boundaries? You know, I know Kyle was always half interested, and he went away for a little bit and came back, and then Colin was always on about that I could be a guinea pig in the BBL or something like that. And it was just perfect timing. And Alan Keane, who was originally from Tralee, I'm sure you know him, he was coaching in Reading Rockets at the time, and he reached out just to see how I was and what I was up to. And he actually spoke to me a little bit about Trey Pemberton, who had just played 2 years in Tralee. So we both signed the same week to play in Reading. And it was kind of perfect timing, really. Had I hung on another year or two in Demons or went to Ballincollig, I don't think I would have, probably not, I wouldn't have become the player I am now, I suppose, really. It was just, there was a bit of luck. It was a bit of just me being curious, you know, talking to different people. I remember reaching out to Paul Dick and Jason Killeen, Colin, Connor Grace was a really good sounding board for a while. And just, they said, why not, you know, just go and see what you can do. It's not like you're going to make mortgage money, but it is the experience, you know, and just to see how good you can really become. So I did a year in Reading, I did a year in Germany, and then I went away and played in Le Plata 2 years ago before coming back. So yeah, it's been a really enjoyable journey. I've been extremely lucky to get where I went. But again, if I didn't come into that Demons team, I don't think I would have been able to leap across the pond then and play elsewhere, you know.
So it's been a progression all the way along. And what did you find was the benefit of being full-time, essentially playing in your three big leagues or three big countries?
Yeah, Spain was definitely the most challenging on my body and mentally, because it was every day. I spoke about it the other day and said, like, just the short-term memories is a massive skill for basketball players, and particularly when you're every single day, like, there's, you could be so good on the Monday, and then on the Monday evening, and then the Tuesday morning, it's just, you're playing against the same players and with the same players, but you're just not at it. So learning that skill of, you know, just having a short-term memory and just, like, pushing the board out and really seeing, like, thinking long-term, like, what this is going to do for me as a person, not just a player, and what I could bring back. I suppose there's so much talent right now in our league, but there's so much talent coming into our league in the next couple of years, and all the guys that are away. It's not about the, you know, I need to go high division one. It's the only route. Like, I went to UCC down the road and I ended up playing professionally because I want to push the boat out. So there are, I felt like I ended up playing on the same team as Jordan Blount, and I played against John Carroll, and both of them left at 15. And that's not me being any bit better than them. It's just, it's a different way you can go about it. And yeah, I just think there's different avenues for those young boys and young girls that want to play and reach those levels, you know.
And what is the benefit of then playing it pro? As you said, you were able to do it. There's different routes, and you said there's different pathways now. So you didn't have to go, let's say, America. You did your degree in Cork, but then having done the degree, you could have just stayed again in the Super League. But what did you find was the benefit of playing abroad?
Just becoming a better, but I suppose playing against different and better players, playing with better players, you just grow. You're challenged every day.
What was a hard lesson, Adrian? Like, you mentioned about having to have the short term memory, but like, what was the time where you were really tested? You said it improved you as a person, it hardened you. But how? Yeah. Tell me about maybe what was a low moment that tested Adrian O'Sullivan.
Not being allowed to take possessions off was definitely one. Like over here, like defensively in particular, like you can take the odd defensive possession off because you know there might not be five all-stars or six all-stars on a team, but in La Plata when I was in Spain, it was like if you're not on it every single possession, and defensively it might have been my downfall over there. Well, it was, I'm not going to lie, it was my downfall over there. It's just not being able to guard people that are 6'6" on the wing and much stronger than you, and just that, having to deal with that consistently, it's like you're going back and you're like, geez, like it's, if I can only play one side of the floor here, like I'm not going to play. And having to battle through that and ask questions, and how am I supposed to improve as a defender? How can I get on the floor? So that was definitely a real low moment. It's like every single day, like there's people just scoring on you just constantly, and they're just relentless. They're trying to get their next contract. So that was definitely difficult.
How did you adjust, Adrian? Like, you got better, or you worked it out, or
yeah, I just got better by asking questions, just particularly to the coaching staff in Spain. It was like, how am I supposed to guard these guys that are a whole lot bigger than me, a whole lot taller than me? Like, can I change my angles? Is it my foot speed? Is it, you know, me just sagging off and not using my length or whatever? So yeah, there was a couple of different things, and then just being tighter to my player, I suppose, off the ball. I was over helping way too much, which created long closeouts then for people who are really good shooters and much better shooters than people over here. So that was kind of, I got better at it. I'm certainly not a brilliant defender, but I definitely got better at it. So that was probably a low moment that that I battled through, I suppose.
Well, it's just interesting, like I think it fits nicely into coming back to this weekend, is that this idea of having to guard big wings and different things. Aina are probably the one team in the country who have that kind of, one Irish team anyway, who have multiple big guys who they're just going to rotate of which guy wants to post somebody up. So what do you see with Aina? What do you think the challenges there for you that you're going to have to figure out?
The thing about Aina is, like, you look at some of their results all year, like they've won games in, you know, when they score 75 points, and they've won games where they've scored 98, you know, so it's like not a whole lot of teams do that. And I'm not saying they're inconsistent, but they can win. It's actually it's a positive, you know. They can win a whole lot of different ways, and they have multiple scorers who can get into the 20s. They're much deeper than a lot of the teams in the league. So, yeah, it's just kind of, it's understanding who's on the scout. You know, they've had some injuries. You know, some people have come back, some people aren't back yet. There's rumours, whatever, but you have to prepare for all 9, 10, 11 guys. Yeah. And, you know, they're very patient. They rotate the ball very well. They certainly don't rush, particularly Josh, that he's playing at a really high level, probably the highest he's played at in the last 3 years, 4 years since he's come to Ireland, I think. He's their engine, but he's their engine in terms of he can play slower or faster than a lot of guys that we play against, you know. So he's a massive challenge, and I think everybody ticks over when he's ticking. And then they just have 5-6 guys that can catch and shoot, and they will miss six in a row and shoot the seventh, you know. So
and the 8th and the 9th and the 10th and the 11th.
There you go.
And Adrian, Connor mentioned about how there's parallels between both clubs. You were going against each other trying to get promoted. Like there was a year, I think you only last two or three games. You had to play two consecutive games and you were beaten by them, having had won the cup in the first division and had a great regular season. But you got up there then. And then last year, How do you look back at last year? Like, you were the front runners for the league for so much of it. If it had been a standard league, you'd have won it, but you didn't because of the playoff format. Do you look back at last year as, God, that was a great first year, considering we were just coming up, it was our first year in the Super League, or was the sense of frustrating more overwhelming?
First couple of, I'd probably say a couple of months after the season, it was more frustrating than anything else. But it's just a massive learning curve when you look back at it. No, it has to be a positive. It's your first time in the league. You know, you're trying to, it is a different level. The Super League is a different level to the National League. And we had a lot of the same players, which me not being one of them, but we had a lot of the same players the last couple of years. And it just, I suppose the learning curve is that it doesn't matter how many games you really do win. Once you get into the playoffs, anybody can beat anybody. So we could have been, 12-5 or 16-1. That was the difference. I think Tralee might have lost six games. We lost one in the actual regular season. And then they go on and they just win three games in a row. So it's almost like winning. Obviously, you have to get into the playoffs. But then when you get into the playoffs, it's almost like winning a second cup. You just need to win three big games, you know, whether you be at home or away. And right now, the league that we're in this season, any of those teams can do that, you know. Like you might say that, I don't know, Sligo or Neptune have lost four or five games each. Like nobody wants to play them in their place. Or at home come playoff time, you know. So it's definitely a learning curve, but you have to take it as a positive. Like we won a lot of games and we brought a lot of excitement into our town, you know, and you know, you just have to, it is positive, you know. We're growing as a club. It's kind of 6 years now to this weekend since we were playing in the Intermediate Cup, actually against UCD Marion.
One of the worst games of basketball that's ever happened.
And kind of from that moment on, we kind of, you know, we were like, where are we now? You know, and Dylan Corkley is somebody I always go back to. At the time, he was probably playing under-19 schools basketball, and you know, he was trying to make the step up. And my uncle Kieran kind of got put pen to paper and looked at who we could bring in, what we could do, and Kieran and Ronan come back around, and they get an American, and they're, next thing you know, they're beating around the bush at the top of the table, and they do that for a few years and then we go up. So I think you have to take it as a positive. You know, it's been an incredible journey for our club and there's a lot of people that we have to thank for that. But we're just really, really excited now for what's to come, and hopefully this isn't the last semi-final that that we're a part of.
And do you think, Adrian, so one of the things that like we're obviously, Marion are scrapping for their Super League lives at the moment, but we almost in our club have, there's almost a sense of entitlement that we are a Super League club because we've been there for whatever 25 years in a row or whatever it is. That is part of that coming up to Super League, that you almost have to build that expectation that no, we are competing for trophies at the top end of this. We're not just happy. And you feel that, like yourself and Kieran and those guys have done it and have that kind of mentality, but do you think that it's taking just that extra maybe a year or so to get other people to kind of realize that they're not that far off being able to do that?
Yeah, I think you definitely need a couple of people. I think Keelan has been a massive help, and having Andre being at such a high level last year, and even Daniel, like he played with Demons for 3 years. He's got numerous trophies as well, and I think you need four or five of those people in your group for it to filter down into the younger guys. But like Dylan, ever since he's turned 20, he's known nothing but winning. You know, he was like Young Player of the Year in the National League for 3 years straight, and he played in all the cup finals. He started in each one of them. He guards the American. So he has, I'm not going to say a sense of entitlement, but he does have that like expectation of we're here to win. And I don't think he would have had that if he just was straight into the Super League and you're kind of scraping for wins. And I do think it's harder to get up. It depends on your personnel, I suppose. But it might be harder to get up. It's a close call than it is to actually stay up then as well, you know. But it's easy for me to say that we're 18 months in, UCD, Kilester, Neptune Demons, you know, Vincent's, they've been at it for 25, 35 years, even longer. So they're the stalwarts of the league, you know, and we've got a lot to do if we're gonna stay here, you know.
But that's the achievement of you, Adrian. Like I've often said it to your father Francis. I remember he was coaching Demons, Billy Kelly team in the early 90s, and he was talking about, I see my future in Ballincollig, and where traditionally, you know, there wasn't a big tradition, you know, on the south side of the river. And what Ballincollig have gone on to do is phenomenal. Like, I'd say it's nearly, like, and I remember Kieran being bullish, we have to keep our own, because at the time you were kind of a feeder club, two Demons. You,
That's right.
The poster boys, right, yeah. Like, and Kieran's bullishness, and just to say no, that this has to change. And for what has it made to the club going National League, stroke now Super League? What difference has it made?
Well, I think our own younger boys and girls are able to see people, you know, around the town, around the village, that it's much more realistic for them. You know, it's more, we're coaching those kids, and then a couple of hours later or a couple of days later, we're playing in games that are at the highest level in the country, you know. Whereas if I was still playing in Blue Demons, like, maybe the 15-year-old boy that I'm seeing, is he really going to go in and watch all the Demons games? Whereas it's, this guy is coaching me, and then 2 days later, he's playing at the highest level. So I think it's great for the younger people to aspire to. It's definitely brilliant to bring in professional players. Like this year, John Dawson and Jose have been incredible, you know, people.
In what way?
Obviously, they're very talented players. They play both ends of the floor, but just as people, as leaders, as, you know, they're people, if that makes sense. They just want to be around the kids, and they want to help the club. They understand, you know, our goal as a club is to involve everybody in the community, and that if we're to be a stalwart in this league, we're going to need that 13-year-old in a couple of years' time. We're going to need that 18-year-old in another couple of years' time. To, like, we can't just be this one-hit wonder. And I think that's where Kieran, my uncle, and my dad as well, they are coaching the 18s all the way down to the under-9s. And then we're getting more and more voluntaries. That are really trying to help us, and they can see the vision, and so yeah, it's, but it takes all of that and more for us to remain in the Super League, you know.
Yeah, well, look, Adrian, it's an exciting long term project, but there's also obviously a really exciting short term goal at the end of this week. Yeah. So look, best of luck in your first cup semi final back with Emporium Cork Basketball, and hopefully it's an amazing occasion for the club, and you're looking forward to coming to Dublin in a couple of weeks' time to try and lift the trophy for the first time. So best of luck.
That's it. Cheers, man. Thanks a million, lads. Appreciate it. Cheers, lads. Bye, mate.
It's an exciting one, Kieran. It's, Marion certainly, for the years before we had come into Super League, with the Pat Glover, Gary Edge kind of era, when they come up from National League, for some reason, they just couldn't get by a cup quarterfinal for years. They just kept losing games, even though they were quite talented. And that first cup semi-final, it was the Tralee one on national TV. I still remember a lot of the game. Kind of, it was an exciting thing. And then as you build towards that and get to your club's first cup final, it does bring so much energy into everything that's going on about the place. It kind of... validates, but gives a lot of volunteers.
Actually, I mean, when you won in 2011, it's one of the great cup moments, you know, like, it was against the head. That was what we were saying about that Demons Kilister dominating for that 7-year stretch. Someone like yourselves came in, and just how huge. I remember looking at someone like Fran Ryan that day, you know, just like how much he's put into basketball. And Marion have been, you know, our standard bearers in the 70s, etc. Maybe missed out on a lot of the heyday of the 80s as such, you know, while they were part of the scene, wouldn't have been up there for top fours, etc. I remember 86, all right, they should probably have got to a cup final that year, but there was that gap. But for you to win that, and it is massive, because you said trying to get that, there's different thresholds, because, like, I'm actually, for the paper on Saturday, I interviewed Gillian Hayes. I know her two daughters are obviously playing now with Wildcats and with the Irish under-20s and on the senior panel, Sarah and Kate Hickey. And it was just, even with talking to Gillian, like, Wildcats were a team that had different, when they came along in the late 80s with that nucleus off of Gillian and Michelle Maguire, coached by the great Jerry Fitz, you know, they got into a top four, but then for them to try and do something to win a league, it took them 4 or 5 years. And even after they were winning leagues regularly, they kept falling short in cup semi-finals and finals and underperforming drastically. A bit like that great Star team, you know, with Fulton, Maguire, and coached by Danny. Like, they never won a cup. Like, the amount of semi-finals and finals, we were on about Shane Collin winning free throws. He did it against them as well. And
in one of the most bizarre endings to a
you know, and And like, so the amount of times they lost cruelly, they you're on about the Demons game. I remember it was famously the first of Denny Notre Dame's, a cup quarter final, as you said, can often be the final. And Star were 27 up on Notre Dame in a cup quarter final, and they lost. Notre Dame famously came back and went on to win four cups in a row, beating Star regularly in either that quarter final or the semi-final. And for all these great teams, like, it took till 98 when they had won four leagues in a row for Wildcats finally to get through. They'll be the 25th anniversary team in 2 weeks in the arena. But actually, now we have it where Wildcats, it's been 20 years since they last won a cup, but they're back now in the semi-final this weekend. And that will be, obviously, themselves and Colchester will be an interesting one. But I suppose the glamour game is Trinity Meteors against DCU. That is the standout game for a neutral, possibly over all the grades. And obviously, we have a lot of underage games, which we'll preview more for the finals. But the Trinity Meteors DCU game is, we have, obviously, DCU have been it's so consistent over the last 15, 17 years. It's unbelievable. Along with, now Meteors are looking to, they seem to be that they're looking to join. There hasn't been a big three, I guess, since UL dropped back 6 or 7 years ago. Glenmire and DCU have always been there. So this is a massive, they've done one part of it, as in beating Glenmire down in Neptune. DCU is going to be, like, it's a massive game for both teams. Like, where do you see that one? Where would you lean towards?
Yeah, it's really interesting. You look back at the league so far. Trinity Meteors have only lost one game, and it was to DCU. Meteors have a really, now they didn't have Dana Finn when they lost that game, but Meteors have a combination between Claire Melia and their American Taborn, who nobody in the league is capable of matching up with them size wise. But the nobody except for one team, and that one team is DCU. And DCU's downfall so far this season, they've lost three games, and it's just been scoring wise. But Mark Ingle brought in a new American the week before Christmas. She had 20 in their last game there. So it's set up to be a really, really interesting game. And it goes back, I think, to some of that, even the stuff we're talking with Adrian there, of that sense of just, we expect to be here kind of thing, that DCU have been there for the last couple of years. They expect it. And Trinity, the club overall, Meteors as a club haven't won the cup since 96, but then you flip that on its head and you say you have someone like Claire Melia, who won the cup last year, was the MVP of the cup, and she fully expects to, and I'm sure Dana Finn expects the exact same of it. And we were fortunate enough to have another guest joining us, and it's Emer Martin from Meteors. Emer, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Emil. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you, Emer.
So this is a new stage for Meteors as a club. It's kind of come around in, you've kind of had a roller coaster journey for the last couple of years, that you pushed pretty high in the league, probably with third, I think, the year Owen Chubb coached, and it looked like you were on the cusp of kind of making a breakthrough, and then there's a couple of down years that followed it, and now you're right back there sitting nicely atop the league at Christmas and heading into a cup semi-final with DCU. How has it all kind of come about, and what's the excitement like in Meteors?
Yeah, I suppose it's interesting because obviously few up and down years, dropped down to D1, we got back up quick. So that was kind of the goal. But I suppose having joined with Trinity a few years ago, it's obviously, I suppose, any type of kind of where there's two organizations come together, there's going to be teething issues. But definitely, I think you see now that still not perfect, I would say, but we're definitely getting in the right, going in the right direction towards kind of the setup that DCU Mercy would have out in DCU. But no, look, I think, as you've said, kind of the Claire Melia effect this year is massive. And like, not only has she won the cup last year, but the year before that, there was no cup, but the year before that, they actually beat us in the Division One National Cup. So she personally is going for three in a row, which is special for an individual. But I think it's kind of an interesting team in that, like, they don't blow teams away. They kind of know their limits and are happy living on the edge in a way, like we saw it at the weekend. Couldn't have been closer against Mystics, but definitely they kind of play, like, keep it close. And at the same time, though, Claire can just turn it on and really kill a game for you, even if it's only by 3 points, but she really does. There's definitely Claire Mealy effect.
So there's a Claire Mealy effect, and you spoke there, Emer, about the link between Trinity and Meteors. So just for outsiders who mightn't be aware of it, and obviously it has become quite common, and as you referenced DCU Mercy Mark, with Mercy linking up with DCU, Connor obviously with Marion linking up with UCD in the early noughties. Just talk to us, first of all, so like a lot of us would know Meteors as being, you know, a powerhouse in the 80s and then consistent through the 90s, won it in 96. Talk to me about, let's say, Emer, your own involvement, getting involved with the club and where its base traditionally has been, and then the link with Trinity.
Yeah, so I suppose Pat Clark would have really kicked things off for us and would have been based in Naoimh Olaf GAA Club there in Sandyford. I suppose we haven't got the luck that Father Matthews have, where they have their own arena now. It's very, especially South County Dublin, you know, you're very much spread out trying to get hours wherever you can in whatever gym you can. And I suppose me growing up, like, I think I started Super League when I was 15 or 16. It was kind of the done thing, especially for us in Meteors. You know, we had kind of come through that where we had superstars, as you said, in the 80s, 90s, like unbelievable teams. But I suppose we didn't really have that. We maybe weren't drawing in the country players that other teams could pull in through scholarships. So it was very much, I suppose it was nearly a developing club in a way. Like, we were back to blooding young players, 16, 17-year-olds, and they probably stayed there for 15 years. You know, like, there was a big exodus kind of when we got back to Super League. There was very much a big exodus of the old and then bringing in the new. We would have gone from Olaf's then. We're out of Olaf's altogether now. We're kind of spread across Rosemont, Theresians, Closh Discon, Closh to Owen, which would be where we pull it all up. Not anymore, actually, but we used to pull a lot of players from Closh Discon during Marie O'Toole's reign. And I suppose now, well, we couldn't compete, you know, like, there was always, we knew we needed that link. We knew we were jealous of UCD Marion down the road. They had that link. UCD was right there. We couldn't offer the scholarships. We had no, like, carrot to dangle in front of the best players in Ireland to be like,
we're talking about Emer, the girls who might be coming up from the country.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, obviously, like, you had Idel, Dana, and Claire right away, like, three yeah. starters with the national team. Like, so there's been that link. And what else? What other way? What the scholarship is a factor. What else is the attraction or the link with Trinity has offered?
Well, I suppose not only has it attracted the girls from, like, down the country, but we're also able now to actually give Meteors players scholarships to develop them. Like, I know myself, I went to DCU when I first left school because I was sort of, like, nearly frustrated with UCD that I can't go there, play my sport and be supported playing my sport there. So I went to DCU initially. Whereas now it's a local enough university. It's a university that would many of our girls would be looking to hopefully maybe go to anyway, so they can stay in the area and get a scholarship. So I think there was five or six scholarships this year. So it's now attracting not only the Dana Finns, the Sarah Kennys of the world, but also we have up and coming players and we've two of them this year on scholarship, but like the next few years we've some really excellent underage players that hopefully it's an option for them to stay and stay with Trinity Meteors rather than be looking elsewhere for a better offer.
I think one of the things that we found certain, so we were, we may be the first club, I'm not sure, Kieran, you might know better, but we were certainly one of the first clubs. I think it was 98 was our start with UCD. So, and I think one of the things that it brought about for our club certainly was almost having, because there's somebody else involved, an external group who have now some sort of input on your Super League program, it automatically raises the standard because you have to kind of justify what you're doing a little bit. And I think Super League clubs who operate by themselves just as a pure club, it can sometimes be hard to naturally raise that standard just another step or two. You can get to a certain level, but just taking that next little step or two may sometimes require having an external person going, why are we going to give you 3 scholarships? What are you doing that warrants us supporting you in that way? And you have to look at your program in a different way than you probably previously had to. And it's one of the things that certainly it drives it forward. Because I think people, when they look at it around the country, the vast majority of clubs now have it. And they probably lazily look at it as just, that just means an American or two who are on scholarship. And no, that's it.
But as you said, it's a high performance mindset. Like I worked with the performance coach and sports psych head on. I work quite a bit with James Weldon and that great UL Huskies team. And there's no doubt the link with UL, and that was driven by DCU and what they were doing. I remember they beat us in a cup quarter final, and I remember us being stuck in the snow that day, and we just said, you know, like, are we tapping into the resource that's UL as much as... So after that team just became absolutely high performers while it wasn't a national team, and just tying in with the expertise there. You had Keane O'Neill was based there at the time. Keane came in, Dr. A. Colin was involved with the Mayo Footballers at the time. And I could say that team were at a level where the Cork Ladies Footballers were at the time, and so were DCU. And Glanmire then, you had obviously Glanmire with exceptional talent being homegrown, and you had players who were going to Cork universities. So as you said, it's the carrot off because you know, a lot of girls, let's say, like you had with UL, or you traditionally have had this through the years, let's say a girl from Kerry either they're going to Dublin, you know, a lot of the Dublin teams would have the Maureen Neil Lyons, Eilish Neil Ayres that would have played with Naevura, let's say, and a lot of those girls were gravitating, let's say, to a Limerick. Like, A, there was the scholarship, but the high performer, like a Louise Galvin. Louise Galvin is a high performer athlete, like Emer, who's played multiple sports. Is basketball offering, and that's what a link with a college could give you. And you're seeing it all across the board. And so, yeah, it's been huge. And Emer, just speaking of your own path, like, Emer, you had challenges. You played multiple sports, and it's great to hear you use the word we. With Meteors, it still is huge to your core, but you're not able to play at the moment. Tell us, Emer, just a bit about your own challenges, and like, you're still phenomenally involved in sport and your golfing now. Just tell us about, you know, your own journey over the last few years.
Yeah, I suppose I sort of came through the like basketball during the time where funding was cut, not ideal. So I kind of hit 18, and all of a sudden, where I thought I was going to get a summer away at a Europeans, I was all set. You know, I just played up under James Weldon the year before. So kind of that nearly brings you on an awful lot, you know, when you're playing up and confidence wise, developing, playing with better players. So I was all set to go into another summer of European basketball, and the funding was cut. So, like, I'm probably overly competitive and, like, probably too much at times, but I was like, right, well, what next? I can't just rest my laurels here, really. So I was very lucky. I was back playing Gaelic football with Ballantyre St. John's, and the Dublin assistant coach was down at one of the games, so got in playing football with them. was playing with Lindsay Peat. So it was kind of great, good, because I would have gone from having great battles with her against her against in DCU to actually having, again, more battles, but on her own team. So, but then we won the All-Ireland that year in 2010, but 2011, I was hoping to kind of grow more into that team. And I was actually diagnosed with chronic fatigue syndrome. So it was sort of a very sudden halt, I suppose, to my basketball and football. And there's a few.
Emer, where did you get the sense that what were the symptoms you were getting at the time that something's a bit off here?
Yeah, well, it was sheer exhaustion. But I remember we were doing a sprint session with the Dublin team, and I did one, and it was like kind of warm up and then sprints, and just did one sprint, and I was like, God, I can't do this anymore. And like at, 20 years of age, it was definitely gave me a fright, especially after the last years of playing high level sport, Europeans, whatever. So had to pull off that. And then all of a sudden I was kind of became very ill, very suddenly. So I would have been in bed 24 hours, really. Mom would have played a massive role in just waking me to get me to the bathroom, get me showered and get me fed. And then it was back to bed. But she still tells stories of she'd bring me down to the couch for an hour or two, just for a change of scenery, I suppose. But nearly having conversations with nearly a corpse on the couch. So just, I suppose, frightening for her as well. She would have been a sports person, very good hockey player. So to see me go from top level elite sport to not even being able to get out of bed was probably a fright for all of us. I was very lucky then, again, mom pestering people up in the golf club, I think, got in with Aina Falvey out in Santry Sports Surgery Clinic. And I was very lucky. He was in with Irish Rugby at the time, and just really was really lucky that, because I'd been to a rake of doctors and I was being told, take a rest, you'll be fine. And finally he diagnosed me. It's notoriously hard to diagnose. I suppose it's come up again now recently because it's actually very similar to symptoms of long COVID, and they're treating it the same way. So it's interesting now, because when you see long COVID studies, or I'm reading about them, it's very similar. It was a very abrupt halt. I managed to get back after 3 years. It was probably quicker than Aina expected anyway. And I went to Loughborough. I knew I couldn't stay in Dublin. I knew if I was in Dublin, I'd go back playing Super League straight away and it'd be too much. So I was very fortunate to get to go to Loughborough University in England, which was it's an incredible sports college. But it meant
What did you study there?
I was bouncing around a little bit. I was doing Erasmus. So was I studying? I don't know. But I was studying getting back to basketball. It's well known for sociology, so I went over for the year, and it was one of the only universities I could go for a full year rather than 6 months. So it really gave me the opportunity to inch my way back. I was playing the seconds team. I could tell them, look, this isn't a runner, this is a runner, I can do that, can't do that. But then by January I was back way better, and their first team coach, Matt Harburn, who's now with the men's, the Leicester
Riders.
What is it?
Riders.
Yes. He's back with them now, but he called me in to their first team. So, and that was the year we won varsities and we won the books over in England as well. So it sort of came full circle much quicker than expected, but it was a relief definitely to get back. And wasn't 100%, but got back in, ended up playing sevens for Ireland for a while, just sort of trying to
nonchalantly just throw that in.
It was Connor. I was playing tag rugby with Connor, and he just got me so good that I was ready to go.
We had a tag rugby team with the Marion and Meteor's team that effectively was just trying to throw around the back passes every week. That was the goal. It didn't really count as a try unless you threw in around the back pass.
We joined with UCD for scholarships, so we joined with Marion for tag rugby.
Yeah, there you go.
Imran, how are you now?
It's funny, I kind of didn't really like, I remember Kev Foley actually, when we played tag, would have always kind of joked like, oh, Lazy Legs is here. So I never, like, I would have always kind of joked about it, never spoken about the full extent of it until very, very recently, like kind of a few months ago. And then I obviously poked the bear because I actually had, I think they call it a relapse, but I'd rather like a flare up or something. But so I actually have had a rough few months, but I'm actually just coming out of it now again. So I'm playing Division One basketball and sort of managing it, playing a bit of Gaelic as well. But just I very definitely have to manage my load now much more, I suppose, like much more than I ever would have before. But as I suppose get older, it's even more and more about load management.
You want to keep playing sport. It's just that you don't overdo it. But it's not a recommendation to give up sport. It's still best for you, holistically, everything, to keep playing sport.
That's why I was actually misdiagnosed numerous times at the very start with overtraining. But they can't actually diagnose it until you're sick for 6 months so that they actually know that that's actually what it is, because it's kind of long-term thing. They actually, when I went to see Aina Falvey, he was like, the worst thing you can be doing is sitting at home, sitting in bed, because your muscles are just getting weaker and weaker. Whereas it was nearly like having to retrain my body. So like mom would have been on the kind of the course with me, really. Like it was very much, I walked to the bottom of the garden and back for 2 weeks. I walked to the corner and back for 2 weeks. If the first initial 2 weeks went okay, if anything didn't go okay, I had to work backwards. So it was very much walking 20 meters, walking 50 meters. Like, so it was like going from, it's just funny because I would have been training out in Port Marnock, 6 a.m. gym sessions in DCU with the Dubs, and then all of a sudden I'm walking to the bottom of my garden and back. Like it was a very just stark difference.
It wasn't overtraining, Emer, it's just a condition, is it?
No, it wasn't overtraining. That's, I suppose, because I was doing so much, they thought, because I was playing Super League basketball the year I was playing with the Dubs as well, and that was, Meteors had actually moved to Greystones that year. So I was in DCU training Ga in Port Marnock and then over with Dave Biggins to Greystones. So
That didn't help. But
no, and I see where the overtraining, like they might have thought that, but once it went over 6 months and once it just was going on too long, they knew it couldn't have been that.
And Emer, just your Kev Foley comment kind of triggered something in my own head, because like we're obviously close, but I read the article a couple of months ago and I had no idea of kind of the extent of what it was. And how difficult is it to have to navigate something like that where the people closest to you see it all, but not everybody sees it all. And especially when you're in a prime age to be competing and playing at the top level, and people are always kind of like, why isn't Emer playing Super League, or why is this? And it's not something you want to get into with people all the time, but how tricky is that to kind of navigate where it's kind of like this is there, but people don't really know what's going on?
Well, I suppose even just straight away as a sports person, like straight away, you're like, oh, I'm fine, you know, automatically, even if you're injured, anything, like if it's a roll of the ankle, you're kind of like, you want to be competing. So I would say outside my immediate family, no one saw it. Like, not no one saw it, people were aware there was something going on. But even chronic fatigue syndrome in itself is a bit of a, like, it can affect people differently. Same way with long COVID, it can affect people slightly differently. So, like, it's very much a, oh, yeah, like, yeah, she's tired, you know. Like, it's very difficult. And I suppose I really didn't speak about it at all. Even aunts, uncles wouldn't have known the extent of it. And probably no one knew the amount my mom did for me. And probably not even me, because there were things she was telling me recently when I asked her about it, because I was like, Mom, I'm going to have a conversation with you if I'm to talk about this. And there was stuff she said, I was like, God, don't remember that. But, like, even still, and I actually got upset when I did the article and when I spoke about it, because my brain and even my body, like, I can do that. Like, still, I'm like, I should be playing Super League. This is so annoying. But I know I just don't have, not the ability anymore. I don't want to say that, but, like, body won't let, you know.
The capability, probably, yeah.
What is the outlet of playing, let's say, local Division One? Like,
well, yeah.
Which is still a decent level.
Yeah, I've actually only just been promoted now. I'm player coach all of a sudden.
Wow, but God.
It's grand. I play seconds down in Crokes. I play, like, the D1. It's a decent standard. It's good run around. But I suppose when you come from Super League, when you come from being beaten by Glanmire in the semi-final, you're like,
there's Emer, like you mentioned, the players that are there, and there's obviously people like Sarah Kenny, who's also an Irish international and came from Glanmire. But, like, this team, you'd love to be playing with it. What? Yeah.
Like, I'm doing their media, so I stream the games, commentating the games, and, like, I'm actually glad I'm commentating and streaming the games, because otherwise I'd nearly be too invested. I'd be like togging out, I'd say. But no, like, the team they have, like, you couldn't wish for better. Do you know, if you were to pick a few of the players that are bouncing around the place at the moment, and even the next year or two, some of the girls going to come into that, like Ashing Moore and Connor, I'm sure you've...
Yep, Borg sister.
Ashing Moore, and, like, for her to be on her way into that team, it's really a special group.
And even you have Ella O'Donnell, who would have been at that group, who's gone over to Quinnipiac, and she's done really well as a freshman over there. So,
and there's good underage, right? I think the one under 16 last year.
They're in 18s, like, this year.
Probably, like, maybe a year or two gap where it hasn't quite been the strength that you would hope coming through. But kind of 16, 17's extremely, extremely strong. Seamus would have had that 17's team when they were under 11, and then I took the team under, and there's some just, like, major talent, but mass, like, workhorses who are going up and down to Puff Summers in Kilkenny during the week for trainings. Like, it is not normal, the group that's coming after them as well. So it's just exciting not only to have Claire Melia, Dana Finn, Sarah Kenny, Niamh Kenny, like, an amazing group there now, and then the likes of Rebecca O'Keefe, who is an incredible leader and, like, really is the glue, I think, that keeps them together, and even just brings a bit of fun, bit of lightness to it, and then also chips in on the court. But to have that group there, but then also a very exciting kind of youth program following it up, is exciting.
With a club like me, so there's obviously so many parallels between Marion and Meters, sister club or whatever else it would be. But one of the things that I think we struggled with for a while was that, and we still struggle with it, is that there's me and you and people like us who know the history of our own clubs, but the wider base have no idea. So if you said an Angie McNally playing for Meteors, it's like so alien to so many people of the idea that I just find it so interesting that the parallels of particularly Dana and Angie are, like, they're so similar in terms of what Yeah, it's just like the way they walk.
Two good Gaelic footballers too, aren't they?
and like play like real cut into the basket, you know, like, because that's actually why I think Meteor struggled at the weekend, is that Dana was having to bring the ball up, whereas actually you want her cutting and you want someone else to bring the ball up and then get her on the run, which exactly so similar to Angie McNally. But definitely there is that nearly like lost generation in a way. Like we've Karen Hennessy still coaching in the club, Anne-Marie Kine still coaching in the club, involved in the club. Like these people who are incredible basketballers, the girls playing, I would imagine probably none of the girls playing realize, you know, so I suppose that maybe is the one little drawback at the moment, but I think that is what will change in a few years when you've more like proper Meteors girls who've come up through the club. The same way, actually, used to be Marion, you know, is it Josh Gillerin?
Which,
or is it no, what, like these Luke. Kids who are like,
yeah, Luke.
Luke, yes. So like you've few people who are coached by ex-players, you know, and maybe they don't realize, but actually maybe they don't realize that Karen Hennessy is the Karen Hennessy that you would read about in articles, but yeah. She coached you at under 14 and she brought you on and she got you on a Dublin team. So I think they probably have realized that their roles have changed. Like I think Anne-Marie Kine was the regional coach last year and they won down in UL. So maybe they don't see them as maybe me who was sitting front row at the Super League games. I was like, oh my God. Yeah. But they see them as, well, that's my under 14 coach who brought me from being a B player to a Dublin player or whatever it is.
Yeah.
No, there is that. That's been a thing. And I guess we were saying there, Connor, when you know, the cup move to Cork in 2010, there was a conscious effort a bit more within the sport to tap into that tradition and legacy that the sport had and clubs had, you know. So I thought it was a great thing. Like the Hall of Fame has been revived, that scheme has been revived, and the first inductee into it was Siobhan Caffrey, you know. But you do often have players from a certain vintage, while we have a certain appreciation, and you and I have each done a book on the history of the sport. But it's not quite like the GAA where there's that understanding of the lineage. But I think so, where a club like Meteors are, you can't live on past glories, you know. But by the same token, I think now they seem to have a really good blend of modernising the club. And it's still there in the DNA. As you said, Karen Hennessy is still there in the club, still tapping in. And I do think we started this segment out just as Emer was joining us with, I think Meteors could be on the verge. This is, DCU are just trying to win another cup in its own right, but there's also trying to keep this crowd down because it could be a breakthrough cup. If Trinity Meteors win this, they could be here for the next 4 to 5 years at least. It could be longevity. Like, and they have a tradition then of, because it does often happen when a team gets on a roll. You saw it with Demons out of the league, and then when they were back, they just know how to win. And I think there is that DNA along with.
I think success breeds success. Like, who else is going to come knocking on the door because we've Claire Melia playing for it? You know, like, so what 18-year-old country girl is going to come and say, well, put their hand up and come knocking on our door, which we have never had. You know, we were never the first option. It was UL, it was DCU. We were not an option. Whereas to put ourselves in that little trifecta and become an option is incredible.
And Emer, last question before we let you go is, where will you be on Saturday afternoon and what are you expecting to see?
I was debating going down to Cork, but I'll actually be home watching my basketballireland.tv ready to go. No, like definitely I'll be tuned in anyway. It'll be interesting. Like even it's funny that you say that Meteors could be the breakthrough team because actually for Waterford Wildcats, Miriam Liston's actually playing for them, who would have been on that breakout UL team.
Is Miriam back there?
Yeah, I was downstream a few weeks ago. I was like, Miriam. So, like, it's funny even to see her now with Wildcats. Mm-hmm. And, like, definitely, I'm looking forward to seeing the Wildcats game as well. God, I thought they were an impressive team when I saw them play. And sort of, as we discussed, like a lot of homegrown girls and an impressive team, really athletic. So I'm interested to see how they'll do, because actually it's some of their Irish girls really stand out. So it'll be interesting how that goes up against kind of Colchester, where Mimi Clark and their two Americans are very much, they're the top three scorers, I think, week in, week out. So it'll be interesting to see that clash.
Well, that's brilliant. I think you've hit the nail on the head. There's a few really interesting things to watch for. So, Emer, thanks a million for coming on, and especially for, I know it's not the easiest thing in the world to share some of that story, but it is. We do really appreciate it. And I think a lot of people appreciate how much you've kind of let them in on what's been going on for the last while. So hopefully it's a happy and healthy 2023, and we might have to revive M&M's and get down.
Yeah, we'll have to give it another go. There's a World Cup coming, Connor. Get yourself in.
Thanks a million, Emer.
Lovely to meet you, Emer.
See you. Thank you.
Loving you. Bye.
It's Kieran, it's fascinating kind of hearing the story, but I think over the last couple of years, when you've seen scholarship players come into teams, I think people of maybe the Swords Thunder model, which was kind of full scholarships but no underlying kind of support structure. And I think what you're hearing from media is there, and you're seeing it with some of the other teams, is that the scholarship structure can be very successful, but it can only really be successful if you have the spine of the club there to kind of support it and to grow into it, so that you can do this for a couple of years, bring people in, but that it has to be infused with your own club players if it's ever going to be sustainable.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a huge challenge for basketball in general. Like, we're talking about the cup, the amount of cup clubs that have won the cup and been gone within 2 or 3 years, not even in existence anymore. It's quite a list. And as you said, it's that trick of getting that balance between, and Trinity look like meteors, look like they have it. Like, obviously DCU Mercy started out like that. I remember distinctly when they won their first under 19 cup against Juliet Murphy, Dunnigmore, Dami Mullins coaching them, Vanessa Burke, and then that crowd won it. And then, like, so that started with the Ingalls in a small program, linking up with DCU and Ken Robinson. Look what they've become. Like, 25 years later, they're able to do it. And it's getting that balance between both, to have that, and it, like we've touched on it a good bit there, about the benefits of having another body who have, like, you take a DCU, like, they strategically decided, we're prioritizing 4 or 5 sports here, like tennis, like athletics, like Sigerson football. Basketball was another one they went after, you know, and then the likes of the ladies football kicked in. But they were strategic about it. And you need to have a strategy, because what we've seen here is sustained success. Like the two standard bearers still are Glanmire. I know they're not the last two meteors in the cup, but they're 9-1 in the league. Like, what they have done for, now they've been basically 20 years now at the top table, so have DCU. For it to be sustainable, you need both that, as you said, that feeder along with, you know, an institution like that with a third level between the scholarship and the facilities and expertise. So, yeah, Trinity Meteors look like they're geared. But it's amazing how it also can, you know, you do have players who you wonder, are they going to be there in a year or two as well?
Absolutely.
So success begets success. So that's why this game is potentially a watershed game. It could be one of those games where you look at historically, you know, that game was a tipping point. So again, DCU are just thinking of winning their next game. But someone like Mark, who knows his stuff, might be in the Paddy O'Shea mode. Let's give them such a beating that we put them back for 5 years. Because it is a game, I could see Meteors becoming a monster if they were to go on and win this cup.
Yeah, no, it's certainly a possibility. I think one of the interesting things, certainly when you look at the combination of the semifinals across the Super League, is you have a few different clubs now who are either about to win or about to be in the cup final for the first time or trying to win their first cup, particularly in the men's. You have that. Then you have the likes of Vincent's in the men's, who haven't won since 94. Wildcats haven't won since, I think, 2001. Meteors, 96. So there's a lot of clubs there that are either, it's really only Colester and DCU who've won recently in either of the competitions. So hopefully there's a lot of freshness to it, and we should have a good weekend basketball. Which game would you, is it the Meteors game is the one that
I think so. That's the one that I'm most into. I mean, look, like, you know, like Aina, as we said, they've been kicking about, you know, like they've been in three last cup semi-finals. This is their third consecutive without them getting over the line. And as we said, while Ballincollig are only in their second year Super League, by virtue of how strong they were at the first division level, the personnel, and we've also spoken about the West being awake again. The men, you'd have to have Vincent's, while they're the most history and they're the only ones who have actually been over the line at this level. It hasn't been with any of these players. They're very much the fourth team, you'd have it. There's an intrigue as you said, there's going to be a freshness to whoever wins it. But I'm intrigued by the DCU Trinity Meteors game, by the sheer number of internationals playing in it. So, like, you're going to have, like we were just saying, Melia's going to be going up. You know, Hannah is going to be bumping off her. You're going to have Rachel Hodgins. You know, the two of them have been such a tandem coming all the way through. So that's going to be a battle. We're talking about facets of play, and I was interviewing, as I said, the Hickeys, and Gillian Hayes is one of our great post players. And obviously, obviously both Sarah and Kate, and, you know, particularly Sarah inside, we're going to see, which we don't have a whole lot of, the best post players, native post players, are going to be on display at the weekend, along with, you know, the Americans and the other talent that we have, like we're talking about Dana and how dynamic she is. So I think that's possibly the standout game for me of the weekend, is the DCU Trinity Meteors game.
Yeah, so all those Super League games are on Saturday. If people want to watch the streams, it's set up for a big weekend, three venues, 18s, 20s. If you can get down to any of them at all, absolutely do. I think the 18s games, oftentimes it's like, they can be absolutely amazing.
I'm not quite on it, Connor, the way I would have been, although I'm heavily involved in underage in a basketball waterback here as such. But like, I remember, like, traditionally, and like, look, this was you growing up, like, but like, I remember, let's say in 96, 97, like, and that Colester, we talked about Colester and Demons dominating at the Super League level for, you know, either side, you know, around 2007 to 2016 or so. Like, the nucleus of that was the 10 years earlier in the Cup. Like, I remember the build-up when Timmy McCarthy famously had won a league with Tralee. He was coaching a Demons team that had been coached by the likes of Shawnee Murphy and Joshua Sullivan. And then they were coming up against a loaded, you know, Grinnell, Kelly, Dredge. Like Richardson and these boys, and those games were the most anticipated game among basketball people, more than is Jenkins going to win a cup. You know, like the underage can have a fascination. I suppose for someone like myself, I'll tune in more when it comes to the actual final, and we'll preview more of the underage. But it's a massive weekend. I just personally think I would like to see an under 18, an under 20 B cup. I think it would give more clubs. I don't think there's that. I think a club basketball, the schools, is brilliantly done, but I think a club basketball, there's a drop off. We're talking about the Meteors, the Marians, and that. I think it's a deterrent to clubs trying to find up, and that it'll be more open. I think they should go back to having a B cup or even a C cup. They've never had a C cup, but they should definitely go back to having a B cup. But, you know, the fact, as you said, like, and I tell you, and it sounds patronizing, and I think we maybe should have them on some stage in the next few podcasts. But I remember just watching several years, the Cup Finals weekend started. The wheelchair basketball games are brilliant. You know, that's how it started this weekend. it is such a festival of basketball. Like, I mean, even there, I brought a team down to Cork, and we went from playing in the hall, and we went down, got a quick bite to eat, and went to the stadium. Like, how close the hall and stadium are. Like, it is just such a carnival festival of basketball. And as you said, Glanmire has stepped in as the third venue for this weekend. It's a fantastic weekend. And while I know someone like myself has other basketball on, I'll be watching it online. It really is. It's brilliant that we have two great weekends to look forward to, starting with this one. And you know, while there is only at the Super League level, Imperium Cork are the only team, and I think it's massive that they are involved, that there is that Cork presence. There's quite a few underage teams from Cork obviously playing at the weekend. You know, you have Brunel, the under 18 ladies, you have Neptune. So I think and Demons obviously. Like, so you have the underage is going to be fascinating. We might zone in on that more for the final, but look, it's going to be a great weekend to be in the hall and stadium and Glanmire.
Absolutely. Well, enjoy the action, everybody. Hopefully
enjoy it yourself, Connor. I don't think it's
possible to enjoy a game where you play against Martin's provisors. He's the opposite of anything you can ever enjoy. But I was actually talking to him during the week because we were roommates when we went over to China with that.
Are they based in Carrick on Shannon?
Up in Monaghan.
Monaghan, Carrick thing, right.
Yeah. So, I was talking to him, so he's not giving me any information, but looking forward to it. But it should be a great weekend. Hopefully everyone enjoys the action, and we'll be back next week and we'll try and dissect some of the stuff that went on, particularly in those Super League games. So enjoy the action and we'll talk to you soon.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.